Hello and welcome to Film Kid Asks, the podcast where I ask questions to working professionals in the film industry from the perspective of someone just getting started. My name is Jordan, and today I'm joined by Jill Bogdanowicz, the colorist from projects like Joker, Spider-Man Far From Home, and The Grand Budapest Hotel, just to name a few of her impressive credits. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Jill.
My pleasure.
So you attended the State University of New York, where you majored in art. How has that influenced your work as a colorist?
I really think it's important as an artist in the industry and working with other artists, because cinematographers are all artists in their own right. You know, photographers, directors also very, very deep backgrounds in art and painting. And I think it's really good to be able to have that background working with that type of community to be able to speak the same language and understand what they mean when they're talking about, you know, different eras of painting and different types of light and that type of thing. So it's really that type, that education that I got from college really helps with that. And I also, I went to State University of New York at Geneseo, and I spent a semester abroad in Italy. And that really also broadened my horizon on all different types of a culture, but also the art and the types of art that I was learning about.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's great. I think obviously it's incredibly important to have that kind of understanding. But how was your experience at university, and is there anything that you would have changed about your education?
My experience, I loved it. I loved the experience there. And I think the studying abroad really gave me another view, basically a different perspective on where I wanted to go with my life. I really didn't know about this job when I was in university. And what I did do, though, is I was an intern at Kodak at the time, because Rochester, New York was where I was from. And the combination of the technical skills that I needed to be able to use in my intern job at Kodak, which was basically, I was an intern for the telecine department at the time. So I was doing a lot of research and development on film versus video, running all the different equipment. I ran the Avid, I ran the Pogel with a Rank Telecine, I ran a Spirit Telecine with the old Da Vinci 2K 888 panels actually at the time. And so basically I had the opportunity to learn a lot of different technology and a lot of the technical reasoning behind the technology, because I was working for a company that was creating it. So that background is really unique with me, and I feel very lucky to have been in the right place at the right time. And they needed somebody to come out to LA when I just graduated, finished all my internship work, finished all of that, and then I got a job offer to come to LA to work on the first digital intermediate, which was Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? But I was also running, I was also doing computer scripting. I was doing programming for Unix computers with Perl scripting, and I also knew all of the machines, so they just needed somebody with those skills. And I happened to also have an interest in moving up to be a colorist. So it's kind of like condensed version of how I got into it, and how university background and in combination with the internship led me to this path.
Right. Kind of like the perfect storm.
Exactly.
So how important then do you think it is for people to seek out internships and opportunities with mentors, especially at, you know, this stage in our lives at film school?
I think that is one of the most important things, because you can learn a lot of the technical things and you can learn processes and quite a few different things at film school, which is also important. But having a real life mentor that says, okay, you know what, it's really, I found in my experience has helped is, and I did have that mentor at Kodak in my internship. His name is Kyle Alvitt, and he was at the time the only colorist doing R&D work. So he taught me he taught me a lot of the technical stuff, and then he just let me observe a lot of his work, which I learned a lot from as well. So just observing how people, you know, deal with their job and what type of things that they learn, and they circumvent problems before they happen, and that kind of knowledge and that kind of stuff is really hard to get unless you have a mentorship or an internship.
Right, yeah, for sure. So you're also a painter. What are the parallels between the work that you do as a painter and also the work that you do in film?
Absolutely. So I feel that the artistic mind and being able to think outside the box and maybe present ideas that are different in your own perspective, that is all really, really important. I think that comes from my art background, learning again in art school that your own perspective is unique and is valued and is actually really desired by people. So a fresh idea, a fresh approach, maybe something that's different than traditional is all kind of that mentality comes from my art background, I really think. You know, just again, my personality is like that anyway. And I think bringing that to the table really, really helps a lot with doing a project, because, you know, working with these creatives that really want to get a feeling or an emotion to the show or the movie. And so that to me is a really great parallel. And of course, on top of it, understanding color theory, understanding light, understanding what works historically and what doesn't. If you look back at, you know, old Renaissance paintings, it's nothing changes. I mean, an appealing image with a good light and good color is still the same now, you know? So you can learn a lot from that too.
A few members of your family work in kind of similar fields. Your father was a senior film color scientist for Kodak, and your sister is a successful colorist as well. How did having a family that worked in the same industry as you influence your work?
Yeah, so my father influenced my work quite a bit because growing up, you know, working at Kodak, I saw a lot of the projects he was working on, or I heard about them as I was a teenager growing up. And for my 18th birthday, he brought me out to San Diego with him because he had a work trip scheduled for a technical conference for the ACDL, which I don't really think exists anymore, but that was basically a group of engineers and technical people who got together for conferences occasionally. And he brought me out because he was going to that conference, and I just joined him because, like, oh, cool, I'll go to California for my 18th. And when I went there, and I actually was participating in just the audience listening to a lot of these talks, I was speaking to some of the industry professionals at the time, and they asked me what my interests were. And I said, well, you know, I'm photography, because I'm also, I used to develop my own film, have my own dark room. So my background is in photography and painting, and just I'm so inspired by art, and I love movies. And but I also was minoring in physics at the time too, so I was very strong with math and science and programming and computer programming and such. So they said, well, you sound like a great fit to be a colorist. And I was like, well, what's that? You know, I had no idea. And funny enough, the following summer, they had an internship open to be a colorist, basically. So, to be the assistant to a colorist, to come in, and basically they were moving the bay from one building to another at Kodak, and they needed somebody to help move stuff and wire the place and learn about it. And so I got that internship, and that's history. It's got me started.
That's amazing. So what have you learned? Obviously, they kind of brought you into, especially your father brought you into the world of being a colorist, but what have you learned from them that you've applied to your own work?
Learned from my family. So my father still builds lookup tables for me when I need to. He built the lookup table for Joker, and he did the lookup table work for Grand Budapest Hotel. So I can work closely with him and tell him what I'm looking for and what I need, and he can deliver several different things to be able for me to choose from, or I amend it and send it back to him, and we ping pong back and forth that way. So wow. I've learned quite a bit of color science from my father. You know, my little sister is a very, very accomplished colorist, and she's doing great as well at her company at Light Iron. And so, you know, we don't talk too much about work because, you know, it's one of those things that it's probably better that we don't, but every now and then we will have conversations about, oh man, like we're finding challenges specifically in the pandemic for working remotely, or how we're going to do this, or how we can accomplish that. So it's nice to have a member of my family that I can confide in about the same sort of things. You don't have to explain the whole, you know, situation. She kind of gets it. So just having that support is always really important too.
That's amazing. Yeah. So for those who don't know, because I feel as though this is a role that doesn't have the same kind of visibility to the outside world that other positions in the industry have, how early are you involved in the process?
Right. So that's a good question, because it really varies depending on who the client or who the creatives are. Most of the time I am brought in before they start shooting. So what I can do is I will speak with the cinematographer usually and come up with a lookup table. So that's basically like picking the palette and the look of the movie and how colors will respond, right? So I build that and then, or give them, you know, work with them to build that on usually the hair and makeup tests or any kind of shooting tests that they're doing beforehand. So I'll do all of that work before they start shooting. So I'll read the script, I'll look at the lookbooks, I'll look at all the, you know, different ideas that inspired cinematographer and director, and understand the tone of the story, and then I can bring my own vision or my own ideas in and pitch certain things. So a lot of times that is my position. I will be doing that early on. And then that way, from the very beginning of the project, when they're looking at dailies, it has that feel, it has that look that we have intended. So when it gets to the final product, it's not reinventing the wheel. It's basically, you know, refining the look, refining the photography, right? So I do that often, and but there are other projects where they'll just bring me in and say, hey, we shot everything, you know, we want a little different look, or we just, you know, we want a mood for like John Wick, you know, those that I did. That the set, John Wick 2 was the first time I had worked with the creatives, and they had not brought me on early on, but they shot everything, and I just started, you know, finding what their aesthetic was and what worked for the story, which is kind of obviously, you know, frenetic and high energy. And so we found a look that worked well with that. So it really changes all the time. And then with Umbrella Academy, you know, that one I did the first season, and we really found a look and a feel for Umbrella Academy. And that was obviously a kind of a surreal, crazy world. And we really used that color to help, you know, show the details, but in an elegant way and show that kind of crazy world. And the second season, I can't wait for people to see it because it's really fun, and we did the same kind of thing. But most of the time I'm involved early, sometimes I'm not. Either way, it's still like a collaborative like exploration to figure out what's best for the story.
For sure, that again totally makes sense. And that's interesting to know that it varies from project to project, because which I guess also makes sense. But yeah, I understand why they'd bring you on early on so that you can have that creative conversation, because I'm sure it does affect the way that they shoot it.
Yeah.
How do you work with directors and cinematographers in post to help achieve their creative visions? What does the notes process look like? Do you take a run at it first? Is it something, just run me through when you're actually like starting to work on it, how you interact with those kind of key individuals?
Yeah, sure. So again, changes from project to project, and the whole pandemic threw another whole loop. But most of the time, what will happen is I will be speaking to everybody beforehand, before it comes time for the final color. And I'll have an idea, and I'll have, you know, ideas of what they loved, what they didn't love about dailies. I always try to familiarize myself with that. So get in their head a little, understand what they like and don't like. And then what I'll do is I'll take a pass on my own. And I call it a pre-time pass. So I'll go through and smooth things out technically, come up with some ideas, get to understand the photography, get to understand the story, and just try to like get my head wrapped around it for a few days. And then we'll start working usually with a cinematographer. And then the cinematographer and I will have that conversation. Some directors are a little bit more involved in the beginning than others. A lot of times the director will let the cinematographer take a pass first. Sometimes it's a little different where the director is involved from the very beginning, you know. So it really depends on the dynamic. It depends on the desire and really honestly how busy the people are, like how it works in the schedule. But I accommodate whatever would happen. But what I'll do is I'll take my pre-timing pass. Pre-pandemic, I would have the cinematographer come into my theater or bay and sit next to me and watch it, and I would explain my logic and what I could make better or whatever. And then we'd have another session with the director and cinematographer ideally, and move forward from there and get everybody collaboratively in one room. Now with the pandemic, it's different because a lot of things are live streaming, or I have to send files and get notes back on the files. Luckily, the things that I've done those type of that workflow with has been with people that I already have a relationship with and already know the look, and I already know what I need to do, and then it's just more refining. So, you know, that becomes more challenging when I'm not in the room, because when you don't have everybody all in the same space, you know, just human, it's hard, human psychology, it's hard to be able to have a conversation about something creatively if not everybody's in the room to read the energy or feel how it works. But I've been working on it. Like, we've been doing a lot of projects that way, actually. And it has been working out quite well. It's got a little cadence, a little rhythm, and a little system going with that.
I'm glad to hear that, because, yeah, it's very difficult times, I know, for a lot of creatives. Because it is, there is a degree of separation that can be, I think, very frustrating. So I'm glad to hear that it's going well in all the craziness.
Yeah.
But so you've worked with directors that have very distinct visual styles to their work. In cases like those, how much of a say do you have in the approach to color, and how do you attack those kinds of projects where there's obviously a level of like auteurship to the visual look?
Absolutely. I mean, I worked with Wes Anderson, who has this very specific style, right? But he's extremely collaborative. I actually quite enjoyed working with him, and he would say to me, you know, okay, come up, give me some ideas, pitch some ideas. What would the 60s look like? What do the 40s look like? You know, what are the color palettes? He obviously has a lot to say, and me, I'm very respectful, of course, of that. So if I follow the photography, I call it. So if, say, they've got a wardrobe with a lot of pinks and purples and reds, those are the colors that I'm going to focus on, and maybe subdue other colors subtly so that we really celebrate the decisions and the choices that have been made, and that is still supporting the director's vision, but maybe taking it just to a little bit more of an elegant or a little, you know, different feel, you know, that will help tell the story as well. So he was very involved with a DI with all of that, and he's very detailed and he's very knowledgeable, and I quite enjoyed collaborating with him, even though we could change directions quickly and like, oh, you know what we did yesterday, let's try something different. And it was really engaging and really fun, and he really pushed me to come up with different ideas and think outside the box, which I really enjoyed. So in that particular experience, he does definitely have a very specific visual style and a lot of like his own look, but he was very open to collaboration, which I enjoyed. And then there's other things like, you know, with Spider-Man, with Marvel movies, they have a very, you know, they're not all the same look by any means, but they have, you know, they have to respect that there's a lot of big visual effects and there's a lot of detail that needs to be seen. You know, you can't have a crushed look on a Marvel movie. You might miss something that's important, you know, that type of thing. So it's very respectful to the detail, all the detail they put in there, and very specific for the colors of the costumes. You know, Spider-Man is a certain red. And so for that, you know, again, my job is to respect the story, which that's part of it. So I always look at every project that I come into as, you know, again, I'm just here to help tell the story. And if there's a certain look that's already there for me to help enhance, then I'm all for it, you know?
Yeah, for sure. So kind of going off of that a little bit, you have worked on projects like Spider-Man and Ghostbusters that have a lot of visual effects. How does that work with that process? Is that something that you do once the visual effects are in, or is it kind of at the same time? How do you work in that capacity?
That's a good question, because again, it changes.
Right.
But usually what they'll do is they'll give me temp versions as they're going through. So I'll have a basic color and to become familiar with, so I can start roughing it in. Usually it's not the rough green screen, but it's some version of the visual effect that's coming through that is not finished, but I could actually get the correct tone going. So that is we call them temp versions. And then they continually update them as I go through, and I'm coloring and continue to refine how everything flows together. So that's usually happening concurrently all at the same time, and visual effects use as much time as they possibly can to be able to do all the work they can. So they come in very late sometimes to be able to finish the whole show. So I'll have several different temp versions, and then maybe the last version I don't have to change too much, hopefully. I already have it pretty close, and maybe I'll do a couple refining, you know, tweaks with all the tools that I can do to help the visual effect become better, you know, by helping balance some element in the visual effect to make it more seamless. So usually that is a process that's happening concurrently with color correction.
Right. I know there's lots of things happening in post at the same time. Yeah. So that totally makes sense to me. So when you're first deciding on your approach to the grade of a project, what do you look at in the story to amplify the right elements?
It's interesting. Well, I'll have a lot of conversations with the cinematographer and or director, read the script, and so I understand or I get a picture in my head of what that would be. And really just go off of your gut feeling and gut feeling of what should be enhanced and what kind of ideas that I have, and then have those discussions, you know, and just have those really beautiful, creative, constructive, you know, conversations to kind of find my way.
Fair enough. So where do you go? Because obviously you have this art background. Where do you go to find inspiration for your work?
Oh my gosh, lots of places. I love finding things online. I love finding photography and cinematographers and directors, old movies from different countries, all different places. I really love searching for different media. Like I'll sit and search on Instagram or wherever for a long time and find things. But you know, people I know who are inspired by artwork or painting, and different artists as well. I mean, there's I've found quite a lot of people on Instagram or on in art books, or I'll sit in bookstores. That's one of my favorite things to do too, is just go to the art section and flip through things and find stuff. And so there's not one place. I always feel really inspired by that world, you know, because I feel like it's a big part of my history too.
Yeah. So I know you've worked at different companies. What is the process of getting work on a project? Is it something that's assigned to you, that you choose, that you bid on? How does that work?
That's a good question too. So yeah, I work right now, I work for Company 3, and I am lucky enough to be able to have people come to me, you know? So I have directors that tend to work with me, or cinematographers, or sometimes visual effects supervisors, depending on who are editors. I have people that I've worked with in the past that say, you know, we really want Jill on this project. So a lot of people do come asking for me. In the beginning of my career, Digital Intermediate was just getting started, and so there weren't that many people. But, you know, it was more of people in the industry that knew me who recommended me, you know, or would try to assign me a show. And I'd have a meeting with the cinematographer or the director, basically an interview, and see how we worked well together. That happened a lot earlier in my career. Now, not so much. Now it is, you know, more established. So people just come to me. So it's not necessarily that I bid on it, and not necessarily that it's signed to me. It's really repeating people coming back, or people who know of other people, you know, everybody right. knows each other in Hollywood. So it's more like that. And then I usually take as many projects as I can, really, to keep busy without getting overbooked. And I am lucky to have a group of people. I've got other colorists that I mentor or like help pre-color for me. So if I'm getting really busy, I usually don't deny a project or anything. I'll make it very clear, be like, okay, well, I can't do everything on it, but what I could do is supervise. And then I'll have like my right hand, where those guys go through and handle some of the heavy lifting, and I'll do some of the final sessions. And so it's really, it's pretty cool to be able to have that opportunity to take as many as I can and do all types of stuff. I do commercials, I do TV, I do indie movies, I do $200 million movies. I mean, I do all kinds of stuff, which is kind of fun.
Yeah, that's awesome. So obviously you have these people that kind of work with you. So what do you look for in those people, just so that if there's anyone that does want to be a colorist, they know what they can work on to improve their craft for those, you know, you in the upper echelon looking higher one day.
Well, one of the things I have to say, I read a book a long time ago called Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell. And, the whole premise of that is that, you know, it takes 10,000 hours to become a professional at anything. So the hard work is a huge thing. So anybody that works in this industry, right, will have to put in the extra mile to work specifically when they're working with me, because I do the same thing still, right? So I always try to put in the extra mile, the extra, you know, few hours, just to make something a little bit better. I see something that can be better, and I just will make sure it happens. Making sure that things are done to the quality that I would want somebody to do them for me, you know, and bringing my experience to the table to do that. So the people that work for me all have that in common. They're all extremely talented, very hardworking, don't give up on anything. And even if they don't quite get it the first couple times, so just keep trying, and we'll go above and beyond, spend their whole weekend figuring it out without being asked to do it. So that quality is the huge one that I've noticed is a quality that is very common in very successful people, specifically in this industry. That's all I, you know, really have had experience in is this industry. And I would imagine it also extends to other industries as well. But that quality of really just being inspired by what you're doing, loving what you're doing, and just doing it to the quality of not just the lowest common denominator, but just bringing it to the next level. That kind of quality is what I always look for in people. And the great attitude too, fun. You want to work with fun people. You want to work with people who are, you know, bringing something to the table, always have your back too. Like I love the people that I work with are, I'm very lucky. They always be like, hey, did you see this? Or did you hear about this? And, oh, there's this new feature. Do you know about this? Like, you know, I didn't know about this. That's pretty cool. Let's like explore that. So all those things.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, great things to keep in mind. I mean, I think that's true kind of across the board for film, but, obviously good to hear.
Yes.
So what to you is the most exciting part about your job?
Oh, is definitely the collaboration and, enhancing the story, like having an audience that may not even know what a colorist does react to the color, react to the tone. Like that happened on Joker. I had a lot of people who may not know exactly what I do that are my friends or extended family or such mentioned, like, you know, it just felt like the time. It felt like the late 70s, early 80s, and it just felt gritty, and it just made me feel like it was just a dirty place, you know. And those types of reactions make me really make me happy because that reaction is a gut reaction. It's an artistic reaction, and they may not know technically why it feels that way, but that's my job. That makes me excited to see it actually work in that way.
For sure. I mean, your work on that film was amazing, by the way.
Thank you.
Yes. Just so well done. So what kind of on the flip side is the hardest part of your job, would you say?
Hardest part of the job is maybe if I don't see things the same way as a client, even though it's my job to be able to translate what they need in the best possible way. The most challenging part is, I mean, we're all human, right? We don't all see things the same way. Is when I put my best forward and it's still not exactly what they're looking for, and I'm not sure how to get there. And I can usually find some way to get there eventually, but that is always like a little bit tough for any person, I think, in any creative way, when you find someone that just sees things or communicates things in a different way. You know, that's definitely a challenge. I always say that a lot of my job is psychologist, right? Getting inside people's heads and understanding the best way to understand where what they're thinking about and how they're getting there.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's communication, I think, is definitely something that could, you know, be an inhibitor, especially if you don't have the person in the room, which, you know, during COVID, definitely,
yeah,
is the case. So yeah, I could definitely see that being a difficult aspect of what you do. And yeah, maybe if the client is a little bit removed or whatever, if there's a difference of opinion, I could imagine that is very difficult. But the last question I'm going to ask you before I open it up to a few of my friends is, what is to you the most creative part of your job?
Most creative is doing research, being inspired by different color palettes and something, you know, being asked to come up with something, right? What do you, like somebody, a client will ask me, what do you feel it would look like? And then me going out and doing research and finding different images and looking at old films or looking at new films or whatever, photography, just finding, that's really inspiring to me. To have that library of things that are really beautiful to me and trying to find a way to make it fit that story or taking elements of one thing versus another and bringing it together to help tell that story. It's so incredibly gratifying and fun and pretty awesome to see a whole story come together and have a lot of people who all see things a different way all have the same visceral reaction. That's super fun.
Amazing. All right. I'm going to open it up to a few of my friends now to ask some questions to you.
Hi, Jill.
Hi.
So what are the biggest technical mistakes you see beginner colorists make? Like whether it be like skin tones, black points, stuff like that. Could you give me some tips?
Sure. A lot of the beginner colorists or something that that I see common is just going too high contrast too quickly, right? Because on a still image, creating an image that is, say, you just see not moving, you could create a really beautiful image that's just not moving. So you can create higher contrast, you can say, okay, you spend all this time in this image and it's like you do all your fine tuning and then you're like, great. And then you hit play and you watch it play for the scene and it doesn't work because the lighting doesn't work with it, or you're gonna have to fix things like the difference in lighting or the contrast because they walk in and out of light, that type of thing. So one of the things that happens a lot with people who don't have that experience is they make an image look beautiful on a still, but it doesn't work for the whole scene. And then also is like this in the same light is when you make one scene look really beautiful and then it goes to the next scene and it feels like a different movie, right? So not finding that flow. So it's very important, like you can't push something so far on one scene if you have to have another scene that moves with it. So it's all about finding that flow. So that's kind of like a beginner thing that tends to happen a lot.
That's really helpful, actually. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
So I know that there's a lot of like genre conventions with color and film that people just recognize immediately. I was just sort of wondering how much, like, do you consider that at all when you're building the color palette for a movie, or is it sort of something that comes naturally sometimes because it reflects like the narrative connotations?
It depends, actually. That's a good question, because sometimes, yes, different color palettes or different, the history of film is very important to understand when I'm making different looks. So the way that film has progressed from, you know, black and white film all the way up through the different Technicolor 3-strip, Technicolor 2-strip process, all the way up through the different film stocks through the years, has shaped the way people see cinema. Has shaped, you know, Wizard of Oz, that was a Technicolor 3-strip, had, you know, a very, very specific look, and going from black and white to color, they used color to tell the story even back then, right? Just super cool. So just knowing some of that history is very important when I'm building a look. And if there is a movie that takes place in the late 70s, it is nice to be able to find a technical palette that does reflect that era and then build off of it, you know? And so all of those things do really come into play when I'm creating looks and palettes, for sure.
It makes a lot of sense, yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome, thank you.
I was curious to know, for you personally, what you consider to be more important. Obviously, both have like a significant role in every piece of work, but creating a more attractive image or being able to shape the story more through your color?
That's a good question too. And a lot of times I'll mix the two. So I'll look at something and say, a lot of times you have like a female character that has to look really good, right? But higher contrast tends to work for the story. So something's a little edgy or whatever. So sometimes what I'll do is I'll create that higher contrast aesthetic, but I will very specifically keep the face a little bit lower contrast so it's more appealing so that the actress still looks beautiful, right? So a lot of times she still has to look beautiful, but be in a high contrast setting. So there's a lot of times where I mix those two things, right? And I'm always aware of when the actor or actress has to look a certain way. And sometimes it's okay to let the actors go a little higher contrast and not look as elegant or not look as pristine. But I'd say most of the time I am mixing those aesthetics. So just trying to make it flow, trying to make the whole environment feel a certain way, whether it be dark and gritty and contrasty, but then you still have to have a little bit of flesh tone on the actors and have, you know, not as high contrast and to make them look good. So that's a good question. There's a lot of things that go into that.
I know Avdokia has some questions that she put in the chat, but she is currently in a moving van, so I will ask on her behalf.
Okay.
So her question was, color is a really important part of the film. So what is something that you learned from coloring films later in your career that you wish you'd known earlier?
Yeah, that's a good question too. So earlier in my career, I think I was going just for making an image look good and following exactly verbatim what I was told from the cinematographer or the director. Now, it's kind of a double-edged sword because later in my career, I have more trust from people because of the work that I've done. And so I can actually bring a little bit more of my own vision into, or my own style, I should say, into it. And I think in the beginning of my career, I was finding my own style. I was discovering what that is. and you know, wasn't sure exactly. I wasn't sure of myself of what was good and what wasn't for the story. I think just the, you know, over 20 years of experience has made me understand that, you know, my instinct is good, to trust my instinct, to trust my experience. And it's okay to pitch ideas that I feel are kind of cool or different. And it's also okay for them to not like those ideas, because I do that a lot. I'll pitch ideas and be like, you know, this would be really interesting or really cool. Sometimes the director or cinematographer would be like, yeah, no, it's not going to work for this, you know, not because of whatever reason. Or sometimes they're like, oh my gosh, that is brilliant. That is amazing. We didn't never thought of it that way. So I've gained confidence in throwing out ideas and not worrying about them getting thrown away. I've gained confidence in my own style. And I've also gained confidence in not necessarily feeling like I have to do everything verbatim what I'm being told, because a lot of times I've found that everybody's definition of contrast, everybody's definition of cold or warm varies by perspective. So trying to interpret that, I've honed that quite a bit over my career.
This could be a really quick question, but is there a different process for coloring something, you know, we'll be playing in theaters versus like Netflix on somebody's laptop?
Absolutely. Those are two different color spaces, right? So when you're in a theater, you're usually looking at XYZ color space on a digital projector. So you've got light bouncing off the screen coming back at you. And then when you're on Netflix, a lot of times it can be HDR or SDR, but you have, you know, light emitting towards you directly. There's no reflection. So there's a very different perception. And then also size-wise, right? If you're looking at a 30 or 50 foot screen, it's a very different feeling than if you're watching it on your iPad, just perceptually, you know, what in your field of vision, how much it fills. So yeah, there's definitely a very different process. So usually I try to color stuff for Netflix on glass or on a monitor. And usually I try to color stuff that's going to be for projection in a theater, in a movie theater, right? We have both. And then we do need to usually do a version for movies that are movie theater, a version for glass as well. And we have lookup tables that do that conversion, but I'll do that pass on glass as well. So I just try to keep whatever way that it's going to be viewed in the final version. That's usually how I'll look at it.
Great question.
Yeah, very good questions, you guys.
So that's going to wrap up that portion of it. But before we finish this interview, I did ask you to prepare 5 film recommendations.
Yes.
And I'd love for you to kind of run me through the films that you chose, but also why you chose them.
Yes. So earlier in my career, I did the movie called Ray with Pavel Edelman, who's a cinematographer. It is still, when I look back at it, I'm really proud of that work. It was back in 2004. Like, I was in my early 20s. I mean, it was like, I don't know who let me color that movie at that point. But anyway, it was very lucky. But it's a beautiful movie in the palette and what we were able to create with that, to help tell the story with the flashbacks and such, is a really beautiful movie. And I always like to mention that. And then also piggybacking on that one, to the same cinematographer, who I really think is brilliant, is a movie called All the King's Men that I did that didn't really get a huge wide release, and it didn't get a lot of acclaim, but it's gorgeous. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful movie. So that one would be a really beautiful one to watch. Another one that I did there's actually a few in there. I did a lot of work for Clint Eastwood, and Clint Eastwood, his first digital intermediate that he did was Flags of Our Fathers. And he did traditionally a lot of bleach bypass look in all of his movies, which is a photochemical process, right? And he came to me and said, I really want this digital process to feel like the bleach bypass process. I said, okay, cool. We can definitely do that. And what I did is I took a test of his film, and we put it through actually bleach bypass through the print stage. And then I ran that print side by side in my digital theater, created a lookup table, created a look, and basically matched it and made it feel very much the same. And of course, back then you could print on different print stocks, and I printed on something called, there's Vision stock and Premiere. Premiere stock back in the day, it was a higher, deeper black level. So I printed on Premiere, and anyway, ran it side by side, and he loved it. And he loved the control that he had to be able to make the explosions more, you know, red and yellow, but keep everything else subdued, which is a control he never had in the past. So Flags of Our Fathers, and then it's basically its sister movie, Letters from Iwo Jima. were both really groundbreaking at the time with how extreme we pushed the desaturation and the look and to be able to help tell the story, because the Letters from Iwo Jima was a very desaturated look, high contrast. It was shot very high contrast, and but also retaining some of the explosions and stuff. So it was very cool. And then another really interesting one, well, of course, Grand Budapest Hotel is on the list, because that one had such a very specific and precise color palette. And it was very interesting, really fun for me to work on that one. I worked on that one. I went to London to work with Wes on that one. And it was a process. I went back there, I think, 4 times over the period of 9 months to be able to work on that. So that was a very long collaboration. I always joked that I had a great relationship with Wes because I'd wake up every morning with to an email from him, you know, of what he had seen and had been inspired by, or, you know, the old, you know, Kodachrome look or whatever, it's different ideas he had for different sections of the movie. So that one is definitely really cool. So those are kind of like a good 5 to take a look at, because they're just so interesting and they were very groundbreaking at the time.
For sure. Thank you so much. And thanks to all of those of you who asked questions. I don't know why.
Yes, that was such a mess. Thank you so much, everybody.
And of course, thanks to you, Jill. That was such an interesting conversation. I definitely learned a lot, and it was really interesting hearing a little bit more about your background and your process. But that is all for this episode of Film Kid Asks. Be sure to subscribe and feel free to follow us on Twitter and Instagram, or join our Facebook group. New episodes come out every Saturday, and be sure to stream Umbrella Academy out now.
That's right. Awesome. Thank you so much, everybody.
Thank you, Jill.